It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Analysts are picking up on a shift in tone at the Federal Reserve, which as a group is sounding much more cautious compared to just 1 week ago. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The powerful guardians of interest rates at the Federal Reserve met last week, and the suggestion was then that the U.S. economy is strong enough for another hike in interest rates soon. But in the days that followed, some clouds seem to have gathered. Our Thursday analyst, Diane Swonk at DS Economics in Chicago, has been tracking what you might call a mood swing on the part of these policymakers.
What we're starting to hear now is not was it just the one dissenter. As we know, they always speak for more than one. But the president of the Minneapolis Fed, Neel Kashkari, said, listen, we don't have enough inflation to raise rates right now. I don't believe it. Well, it turns out we've now got people sort of stepping in behind him. Rob Kaplan, who's the president of the Dallas Fed, has said, yeah, I'm not quite ready for a third rate hike anytime soon. I want to see more inflation. Charlie Evans at the Chicago Fed, you know, I don't want to tweak on timing the rate hikes, but hey, I'm a little worried about the fact that we're not making our inflation target. And we've seen things that affect prices, like oil prices, now fall.
I know. It's down below $43. Technically, we're in a bear market for oil, and that affects the people who work in that industry quite directly.
It does. And it's good news, of course, for consumers because we like low oil prices. But remember, we now are a major producer of oil and is the only sector we've seen really big investment. If that goes away, you lose investment in the U.S. economy, and that's something that we're watching very closely now. And so the Fed is kind of walking on eggshells about what it's going to do next.
Diane Swonk at DS Economics in Chicago. Thank you.
Thank you.
Two items today involving the safety of banks in America. Today we'll get the first of two reports from federal regulators on the stress tests they've been doing on banks to see how ready they are for the next crisis. Most, if not all, are expected to pass. And a senior Fed official will argue today that regulators should ease off on the so-called Volcker Rule that prevents banks from using their own money to make speculative trades. From Washington, Marketplace's Adam Allington reports.
Federal Reserve Governor Jay Powell will testify before the Senate, and what he'll say is the Volcker Rule is too constricting, that it forces banks to separate accounts that might not actually be taking risky bets. This, as you might expect, is a controversial stance.
The current ideology and deregulation frenzy is insane.
Dennis Kelleher is the CEO of Better Markets, a nonprofit that promotes public interest in financial markets.
It would be like saying there hasn't been another Hurricane Katrina, so let's get rid of all the flood protection programs put in place around New Orleans. Nobody would do that.
Fed Governor Powell is also asking that smaller community banks be exempt from the Volcker Rule. Cornell's Robert Hockert says big banks want out from under this rule, too.
But when it's large banks that are asking for them, while sort of hiding behind or using the sort of smaller banking institutions as human shields, so to speak, then I think we have to take those claims with a grain of salt.
The Fed is just one of several bank regulators that must sign off on any reform of the Volcker Rule. In Washington, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Hi, David Brancaccio stepping out of my anchorman role for a second. It is the final week of fundraising before our books close for the year. We're asking you to step up and help support us today so that we can continue the in-depth, independent economic coverage and innovation coverage and business coverage that you rely on. Any amount, even a small donation each month, really does count. We appreciate your support. Give today at marketplace.org/donate. The U.S. economy these days is not like a Corvette, a Mustang, or a Dodge Charger. It's like, I don't know, Chevy Cruze or Chrysler 200. It's moving along, but it's not blowing the doors off anyone. Where's the extra je ne sais quoi, the, you know, the
oomph, David.
Oomph. That famous economic term of precision, oomph. Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell. Hi.
How you doing, David?
The something extra. We could use something extra, right?
We really could. And one of the things that's holding back this economy is slow productivity growth. It's the doing more with less. It's that oomph that you want in this economy. And particularly, we've been looking at this economy waiting and waiting. When are information technologies just going to start letting us grow faster? The algorithms, the robots, the automation, and it's not showing up in our paychecks. It's not showing up in the way the economy is growing. And I think, David, we are at a fundamental turning point.
So turning point in what way?
So Amazon, you know, it's an incredible information technology platform. And now it's merging even more into the physical world, the Whole Foods stores. And the automation is going to spread. And it's going to force Kroger and all the other grocery stores, but also the consumer brands like General Mills, to invest more in information technologies, to invest more in data as they try to respond to this disruptor. So I think we are moving from a world where we've looked at productivity of entertainment. You know, Facebook makes it easy for us to stay in touch with family and friends, to looking at the productivity of business. And if that happens, we're going to get fast productivity growth.
But I have to ask, greater productivity, doing more with less, as you say, means often the equipment, the automation, the robots do more and humans do less.
So there's a calculation that's out there that says over the next two decades, 47% of jobs could be eliminated by automation. Well, Dean Baker, an economist at the Center for Economic Policy and Research, says, you know what that translates into? 3% productivity growth. If we have 3% productivity growth and we have an economy that's growing at 3% or more on an average annual basis, you're going to create a lot of jobs.
All right. So the perpetual search for what you call oomph, I will call Elan, esprit, puissance.
Can I throw an Italian one in there?
Yeah, what do you got?
Brio.
Brio. All right, Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell. Grazie.
Thanks a lot, David.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.